Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is great joining you this Friday after Thanksgiving, November the 25th, 2016. I hope that all of you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, great dinner, had the opportunity to get together with family, friends, those people close to you. It's that time of year, and with all the crazy stuff going on, we must never lose sight of what we still certainly have to be thankful for, and that's a long list. So again, I thank you for joining me. And this evening, I'm going to be tackling two issues, sanctuary cities and the recent Inspector General report on how the Department of Homeland Security has done it once again, thoroughly screwed things up, potentially leaving America and Americans vulnerable to terrorists from overseas. But before we get to that, I want to remind all of you who are not familiar with me, or I want to remind those of you who are familiar and tell those of you not familiar, if I can get the words out, that I am your host, Michael Cutler, a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, that I write for a bunch of websites. And my goal ever since the terror attacks of September 11th, 2001, has been to wake Americans up as to the risks that we face because of failures of the immigration system. It impacts just about every challenge, every threat that we face. And it's not the single issue that the media and so many politicians and so many organizations such as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and a host of other open borders advocates and agencies would have us believe. I write for my own personal website, and that, of course, is Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. For many years, I have been affiliated with and write for a terrific organization known as Californians for Population Stabilization. Their terrific website is caps.org, C-A-P-S, CAPS Web. I write for Front Page Magazine. In fact, that's where the bulk of my articles have been appearing of late. And I write for The Social Contract. I can also be found at Progressives for Immigration Reform and elsewhere. You know, this has been about getting the message out. And unfortunately, the mainstream media has refused to cover the immigration issue with honesty or integrity, or provide information that is so critical for every American to have. And that's what this program is about, filling that gap, making it clear that it's immigration that really needs to be enforced, needs to be dealt with as a component of national security. And by the way, that's not just my hunch, my idea. It's something that the 9/11 Commission noted. And in point of fact, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. So I see that I have a caller. Let me just see if somebody wants to jump in before we get to the two articles that I just wrote for Front Page Magazine. So let's see who we have. Hello, you're on with Michael Cutler. Who's this?
This is Ed. I was calling to listen. After I hear your articles, I'll talk, chime in.
Okay, that's fine. So I thank you. Just stand by. And we'll get right to the articles then. Thank you for calling in or listening, and I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
Stand by, and here we go. Okay, so here's the first of the articles that I wrote about was Sanctuary Cities versus National Security and Public Safety. The subtitle: Why Sanctuary City Mayors Should Be Given an MVP Award by ISIS and Drug Cartels. Look, this notion of sanctuary is really Orwellian. This isn't about political correctness, folks. Political correctness is about not using language that insults or humiliates other human beings, and I'm all in favor of it. The way that what is now passing for political correctness needs to be thought of is a matter of Orwellian news speech. This is the whole idea of altering the vernacular, altering the terminology, changing the terminology so that we obfuscate what we're really dealing with. That's the problem. In other words, to give you an example, the word alien is not an insult, but starting with Jimmy Carter, and I've written about this as well, we're not supposed to use the word alien because, gosh, we might insult somebody. There's nothing insulting about the word alien. So why then are they insisting that if we use the word alien, we could be insulting someone? The reason for that is very simple. The term alien provides clarity to the conversation. And if your goal is to obfuscate the truth, then it starts with altering language. When you say that everybody is an immigrant and we make no distinction between people who come here from other countries legally versus those who come illegally, then we need to use different language to describe the foreign national who enters legally versus the foreign national who sneaks in or commits visa fraud or violates the immigration laws once they're here. But the goal of the open borders immigration anarchists, as I refer to them, is to eliminate that distinction. So then it becomes a simple matter of saying, well, if you oppose anybody coming here, then you are anti-immigrant. And since America was built by immigrants, you're anti-American. It's stupid. It's crazy. People fall for it. The reality is that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. We love to have company visit, but not when they climb through our bedroom window in the middle of the night. So this is the same kind of nonsense that we're witnessing when we hear the nonsense about sanctuary cities. If you think about a sanctuary, you think about babbling brooks and tweeting birds and blue skies and a place of warmth and serenity, peacefulness, and security. But in point of fact, what sanctuary cities are doing are shielding and harboring illegal aliens. When someone sneaks into the United States, we don't know if they're simply desperate for a job and couldn't get the money together so that they could convince the immigration authorities that they weren't coming to work illegally, which, by the way, by itself is a problem. It's a big problem when you realize we have over 90 million working-age Americans who have no jobs and desperately want jobs. So that by itself is a huge problem. But there are other reasons why an alien may be inadmissible into the United States. And this is based on law. It has nothing to do with race, nothing to do with religion, nothing to do with ethnicity. If you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, we're not going to have a law lesson, but I want you to check this out, where you can read my latest articles for Front Page Magazine. 1182 lists the categories of aliens who should not be admitted into the United States. It starts with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are severely mentally ill and are violent or sex offenders, criminals, spies, human rights violators, war criminals, fugitives from justice, terrorists, or aliens who would likely become a public charge, or aliens who, if they work, would be creating unfair competition for Americans who are similarly employed. That's what the law is about. So when sanctuary cities come along and say, well, we're going to shield those quote-unquote immigrants from the mean old immigration agents, what they've really done is to turn their towns and cities, and in some cases their states, into magnets for illegal immigration. This induces more aliens to run our borders, knowing that if they could get to that sanctuary city, immigration is no longer an issue. Now, among those people might well be terrorists, and it doesn't take many terrorists to create a disaster. It took just 19 men barely out of their teens on 9/11 to kill more people, rack up more casualties on that one day than did the entire Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. Stop and think about that. We used to hear this constant drumbeat of the language, the terrorists have to get it right only once, but we've got to get it right 100% of the time. Every alien who enters the United States provides terrorist organizations with that single opportunity of getting it right. So the idea that we have millions of people in the country right now who snuck in, we have no record of their entry, no way of knowing who they are, what country they're from, what their backgrounds are, who they might be affiliated, what their ultimate goals might be. We're clueless. We are flying blind in a storm. And the storm is the threat of terrorism. Think of how much emphasis was placed on the security of the Thanksgiving Day parade. How many thousands of police officers got involved. All the big trucks with sand to block side streets to make sure that a truck didn't come barreling through and mow down pedestrians the way we saw in France less than a year ago. Many concerns. But first and foremost is the idea of keeping people out of the country who want to hurt us. Keep out the criminals. Keep out the drug dealers. Now, the other thing to understand, and there's been this mythology that if we have a terror watch list, we can screen people. I know Donald Trump has been talking about extreme vetting. Problem is, we don't know what we don't know. Good, effective terrorists are not unlike good, effective spies. Spies have been described, or an effective spy has been described as that person who would not attract the attention of a waiter or waitress in a greasy spoon diner. Now, what does that mean? It means that you may well pass terrorists on the street. Mohammed Atta, the ringleader of the 2001 terror attack, probably smiled at people he passed in the street, and people thought, oh, he's a nice guy, he's smiling at me. People can be really dumb. So nobody really knew who was who or what was what, for the most part, until after 9/11 played out. Some of the terrorists were known, some of them weren't. And the same thing could be said with San Bernardino. We know that there were certain warnings about what was going to happen in Boston with the Boston Marathon bombers, the Tsarnaev brothers. But basically, many of the people who've gotten involved with terrorism are people whose identities are not known to us, or perhaps whose true identities are known to us, but then they assume other identities that enable them to hide in plain sight, or in the language of the 9/11 Commission. So let's for a moment consider New York City. New York City got hammered the worst on September 11, 2001. There was Manhattan that took the brunt of that attack. So while America was attacked, at the end of the day, it was a complex of buildings in Manhattan that suffered the worst damage, next to the Pentagon and next to the airplane that came down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. So here we are, the city that is literally and figuratively ground zero for terrorism. We have the mayor of New York. We have New York senior senator Chuck Schumer running to Washington and saying, give us more money because New York is ground zero for the threat of terrorism. We need money. We need resources. And then Mayor de Blasio turns around and issues identity documents, and the latest figure I read, to over 900,000 people, most of whom are illegal aliens. The reason I say most of whom, the attorneys working for the city were shrewd. They also said, you don't have to be an illegal alien. Of course, they wouldn't dare use the term an undocumented immigrant in order to qualify. If you want to get into museums and other places that normally charge an entrance fee, if you get a municipal identity document, then you won't have to pay a fee to go into some of those attractions. You can enter for free, and the card costs nothing. So what this does is to add to all the illegal aliens who are desperate to get some kind of official-looking identity document, American citizens and lawful immigrants, so it's not 100% certainty that the person who has a municipal ID from the city of New York is an illegal alien. But then when Donald Trump was elected, the mayor comes along and says, and if Trump is going to do a crackdown, we're going to destroy all the records relating to the identity documents that we gave to the undocumented in our city. In other words, we're going to obstruct any investigation that the United States might mount in trying to hunt down aliens who violated the immigration laws. And they call this a sanctuary, a place of safety and warmth, a place of security. This is lunacy. This is sheer lunacy. What they are doing is undermining national security. Again, go back to the 9/11 Commission report. The report made it clear that border security was an essential component of national security. So when aliens run the border, we need to look at it through that prism, through the potential that that alien ran the border or violated a visa to gain entry into the United States, as we've seen time and again, to carry out a terrorist attack, or perhaps to ply his or her trade, which is crime, whether it's drug trafficking organizations organized crime groups and so forth. Now, when you do that, suddenly you make a mockery of all of our immigration laws. Why in the world should we be spending $14 billion a year, which is what we spend on customs and border protection, and they employ over 60,000 people? Why bother if aliens could evade the inspections process, get past the Border Patrol, and once they make their way into the interior of the United States, they're literally home free? When I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee about 3 years ago, I said that under the Obama administration's policies, essentially the starter's pistol had been fired for aspiring illegal aliens from around the world, and for these folks, the finish line is the border of the United States. Earlier this week, I was on Newsmax for a couple of programs, and I'm going to be on One American News Network on this coming Monday. But in my interviews with Newsmax, the issue came up that blew my mind, and I wasn't even aware of it. So much happening in so little time. Apparently, the aerial surveillance program along America's southern border has been shut down by the administration. All this money that was appropriated to try to identify people running the border, coming in illegally, we now have blinded ourselves because of the whim of the President of the United States, who thankfully will no longer be the President come January the 20th. We are living in a dangerous era. Everyone is concerned about terrorism. Everyone is concerned about the potential for loss of life. We see this constant drumbeat of terror attacks happening all over the world and happening within our own borders. Yet you have mayors of sanctuary cities, governors of sanctuary states, a president of the United States who thinks that our immigration laws and our borders are a waste of time and impediment to their political agenda. This is insane beyond words. This isn't about being left or right, folks. It's about being right or wrong. How in the world do you turn a blind eye to the essential nature of border security? How do you turn a blind eye to the fact that we are now awash in heroin and cocaine in quantities we've never seen before? Those substances are not produced in the United States. They are completely illegal in every one of our 50 states. Certainly, those substances are illegal under federal law. So every gram of heroin, every gram of cocaine had to be smuggled into the United States. So when you realize that we've never had more heroin flowing into our country, more cocaine flowing into our country, you realize that we don't have a border. For all the talk about the need to get guns off the street, we haven't heard a word coming out of Mr. Obama's mouth, or a word coming out of de Blasio's mouth, or a word coming out of the other mouths of mayors around the country who've turned their cities into sanctuaries for criminals, illegal aliens, or potentially terrorists. No one's talking about, hey, you know, if we crack down on gangs, if we crack down on the drug trade, we could crack down on violence. Most violent crime has a nexus to the drug trade or to narcotics addiction. The guy that needs a fix commits a robbery to get the money. The drug cartels and the drug gangs battle each other on street corners for turf control. This is a violent, violent business costing thousands of lives each and every year. And yet, we've never had more drugs flowing in. We've never had more illegal aliens flowing in. We've never had more Americans losing their jobs to foreign workers. And yet the beat goes on. And that, in a nutshell, is the story about sanctuary cities. The idea that we have mayors who are thumbing their nose at Donald Trump, the incoming president, saying, hey, we don't care what you do. We're not going to make it easy for you to arrest these poor people. And you hear these false arguments, and they're outrageous. We can't arrest 11 million. Well, it's probably 30 to 40 million. And we've never heard that argument with any other area of law enforcement, by the way. You don't hear people saying, well, we can't stop all drunk drivers. We can't stop everybody who drives and texts. So let's just forget about it. It wouldn't make sense. Generally, laws are not enforced more than a fraction of 1% of the time. Yet, where immigration is concerned, that becomes the war cry. We can't get them all, so let's do nothing about anybody. And even when Donald Trump says, let's start with the criminals, let's go after the 2 to 3 million criminals, the murderers, the rapists, the robbers. This isn't only about Mexico. Every race, every religion, every ethnicity, every nationality has three groups of people: the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is human nature. Has nothing to do with skin color, has nothing to do with religion, has nothing to do with race. It's human nature. If you cut yourself, I don't care what your skin color is, we all bleed red. We are the same inside. We are the same in terms of morality also. The good, the bad, the ugly. You would think that a mayor of a town that is worried about crime, look at Rahm Emanuel, look at the bloodshed in Chicago. It's a free fire zone, for God's sakes. And yet, when the mayor hears that in the White House, Donald Trump wants to go after criminal aliens, he defiantly, Emanuel defiantly holds a news conference and says, my town will always be a sanctuary for these people. How in the world can a mayor, number one, take an oath of office and violate his oath by those words and those deeds? How can he be protecting his citizens when he won't even want the federal government to deport criminal aliens? The betrayal of America and Americans by these political thugs is beyond belief. And if they looked at the election results, it's pretty clear that the average American wants our borders secured and our laws enforced. When we say secured, it doesn't mean that we're going to weld it shut. I lock my door at night. I make certain not to let people into my home unless I look through the peephole first and make certain that the person doesn't pose a threat to my safety. But gosh, we certainly don't turn around and say we're not going to let anybody in. We're just saying let's be careful who we let in. And yet Rahm Emanuel holds a news conference and defiantly says, I won't allow the federal government to do its job in my city. I will do everything I can to impede them. We hear the same nonsense coming out of San Francisco. Never mind Kate Steinle, who was gunned down by an alien who'd been deported five times before and told reporters he specifically went back to San Francisco because he knew that it was a sanctuary city. Did Kate Steinle find sanctuary in San Francisco? Did her family? You know, and it's not just that one case. The news media is fickle. They picked up on Kate Steinle because she was a young, very pretty woman who had a bright future. But this kind of tragedy plays out many times per day across the country. But when the girl is extremely pretty, then the reporters get excited and say, oh, we can put her picture on the front page. I mean, that's what these journalists so-called are about. If we can sensationalize it, then we'll talk about it. If there's nothing sensational, we'll ignore it. What most people don't realize is that we depend on the media to tell us what's going on. When I do speaking events, I generally like to ask people, how many times have you been somewhere where what you witnessed was newsworthy, where what you witnessed wound up on the evening news that night or the next day? And it's rare. It's truly rare, unless you're a federal agent, unless you do that kind of work that puts you in the midst of that kind of attention. Most people don't witness newsworthy events. They go to their job in an office or wherever they work. They work as school teachers or bakers or construction workers, and they go about their lives. So the only way they know about what's newsworthy is by turning on the evening news or picking up a newspaper. And so we're depending on the journalists, and the journalists generally ignore stories until and unless it's a pretty young woman like Kate Steinle, and suddenly that makes the news. But please understand, tragedies comparable to the Kate Steinle death, murder, are happening every single day in states from coast to coast and border to border. The news doesn't report on it. And when they do, they very often won't identify the assailant as an alien, when the assailant might well be, but they'll simply say, a resident of Florida, a resident of Oklahoma, a resident of New York City, shot, stabbed, killed, raped, whatever, because it's important for them to censor the news, to not let people know the magnitude and the scope of the problem. And if you dare say this, you're branded as being anti-immigrant, when in point of fact, if you want the laws enforced, you're pro-enforcement. And those same laws that tell us who to keep out tell us who to let in. And we let in roughly a million lawful immigrants every year under the laws that I support. In fact, spent 30 years of my life enforcing and administering. A million a year is more than the rest of the world combined. we naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens. Again, that number is bigger than the rest of the world combined. But it's not good enough for Rahm Emanuel. It's not good enough for Mayor de Blasio here in New York City or mayors around the country. And Trump's idea about stripping them of federal funding and perhaps taking other punitive actions is right on. If you want to talk about anti-American, what they are doing to shield potential criminals and terrorists is anti-American. And my suggestion, by the way, is to find out when these mayors come up for re-election. And you don't have to live in a city to contribute to a campaign. And I don't care about parties. I don't care about Democrats, Republicans, liberals. These are left-right issues. If you know of a mayor of a sanctuary city and you know that the person running against that mayor opposes sanctuary cities, there is nothing to prevent you from contributing to that election campaign of the candidate who will oppose mayors of sanctuary cities. These people need to be removed from office because they have proven themselves to be disloyal. They have proven themselves to be uncaring about the violence being perpetrated, and not just on American citizens, but on members of the ethnic immigrant communities where, for the most part, the violence is occurring. And again, it's not just the Latino community. It's the Russian mob. It's Asian organized crime. It's the Jamaican drug posses. It's the Africans and the Middle Eastern criminals. And again, every group, every race, every religion has the good, the bad, the ugly. So if you can get the bad guys out of the ethnic immigrant communities, you make America more secure. You make the immigrants, the honest-to-God immigrants of those communities, much safer. And it's something that we really need to focus on, that we've got to reject the false narrative that somehow it's anti-immigrant to insist on enforcing the immigration laws that were designed to keep out criminals and those people who would displace lawful immigrant and U.S. citizen workers. That's as American as apple pie. Now, second article that I want to discuss with you, and this was one that was just published this morning, again, Front Page Magazine. DHS loses thousands of keys to the kingdom and issues some keys to the wrong people. Now, the keys that I'm discussing here are the green cards, what used to be called alien registration receipt cards. Now they're called permanent cards because the effort is underway to remove the word alien from the vernacular. So when you say alien registration card, everybody sees purple and jumps up and down and howls. By the way, the requirement that aliens, that is to say foreign nationals present in the United States, carry an identity document goes back to the Alien Registration Act of 1940. Almost 80 years ago. Think about that. 1940, they came up with this regulation, and they said, okay, if you're over 18 years of age, you have to carry proof of alien registration. I don't know how they want to change the word alien registration. But by the way, there is one place where the word alien is not only acceptable, but they're happy to use it. Anybody out there know what it is? It's the Dreamers, because the A in Dreamers is an alien miners. Suddenly, because of this need to equate what they're doing with the American dream, the dream that Americans no longer seem to be entitled to, but aliens are, they had to have an A, so they made it alien miners, and then the word alien became palatable. Again, this isn't political correctness. This is Orwellian. George Orwell very sagely noted that in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So now we get to these alien cards that weren't mailed to proper addresses. In some cases, they mailed out duplicates. In other cases, they got the information wrong. In some cases, fingerprints hadn't been run properly. And this isn't a new problem. A couple of months ago, it was discovered that at least 800 aliens who had been ordered deported from the United States were suddenly given United States citizenship. I mean, stop and think about that stunner. And now it turns out it might be thousands of aliens who were naturalized even though they were supposed to be deported. If you want to talk about anarchy, if you want to talk about a swamp worth draining, look at the immigration components of the Department of Homeland Security, the DHS. It's gotten so bad, or it has been so bad for so long, I call DHS the Department of Homeland Surrender. Now, I want you to think about something else. If everybody can blithely say, well, those immigration laws aren't worth anything, oh, it's not worth bothering, why then were immigration component agencies, or the immigration agency itself, the INS, folded in to an agency known as the Department of Homeland Security, an agency that was assembled in the wake of the attacks of 9/11, ostensibly to protect America and Americans? They didn't take immigration and put it into Fish and Wildlife. They didn't take immigration and pop it into Disneyland. They took immigration and said this is part of Homeland Security for a reason. So it's in Homeland Security, but mayors like Rahm Emanuel and de Blasio of New York and others shrug their shoulders and say, well, we're not going to do anything about it. I guess they don't give a damn about Homeland Security. If they did, they would understand the point. And you have Republicans doing the same thing. Oh, these poor immigrants. No, the poor immigrants are the people who came here legally, spent tons of their own money, waited in some cases years to come here so they could get their thin sliver of the American dream, and they must feel pretty damn stupid because you have politicians from both parties tripping over each other to legalize illegal aliens while lawful immigrants are being treated like garbage along with U.S. citizens. You could almost make a case for anybody applying to get a green card being a damn fool. It's kind of like going on the New Jersey Turnpike. You know, I drive down the Turnpike frequently when I go to Washington, and right now the Jersey Turnpike and other highways give you a choice. If it's a toll road, you can pay cash or you can use your Easy Pass, and so you have a choice. Well, as far as the immigration system is concerned, they've opened up a third lane that says free, no speed limit. So what would you think of some guy in a car driving along the Jersey Turnpike and he's got three toll gates to go through? One says cash, one says easy pass, and one says free, no speed limit. Who in their right mind would go anywhere except free, no speed limit? In this case, free, no speed limit is enter the United States illegally and all's right with the world. And in fact, you have immigration attorneys in Washington who made certain that comprehensive reform legislation also included provisions to have the federal government pay the legal fees for illegal aliens to get legalized if that train wreck of legislation had been enacted. And when I tell this to people, they say, well, that's because they're just pandering to the illegals. Folks, if you believe it, you're a fool. You're a fool. The reason that they wanted the legal fees to be paid for illegal aliens was to make certain that the immigration lawyers got paid, because some of these illegal aliens don't have any money or might be inclined to stiff them. So what's the solution? Don't take money from the alien. Take money from Uncle Sam, because Uncle Sam is happy to write the check, and they're happy to write the check because members of Congress put that provision in the original Comprehensive Immigration Reform Act. And by the way, before everybody gets all excited about how wonderful the first amnesty was, recognize the fact that the first amnesty, which was supposed to be a one-shot deal and involve 1 million people, winds up involving almost 4 million, also had a confidentiality provision that was copied in the subsequent legislation. And what does that mean? If an alien applies for lawful status under amnesty, or you can call it whatever you want, that part of that immigration file would be off limits to law enforcement other than immigration. In other words, you could not share that information with the FBI. In theory, when they did that in the 1986 legislation, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, if some FBI agent came to you, and I had a case where the guy was suspected of being a serial killer, I couldn't show them the file legally. They had to go get a subpoena. Waste their time and spin their wheels, because goodness gracious, we've got to shield those poor illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants, from other law enforcement agencies to make sure they would come out of the shadows. So even if you come out of the shadows and you're wanted for raping and killing little children, don't worry, immigration by law can't share the file with any other agency. This is the kind of lunacy that both political parties have done to us. This is why I suspect one of the reasons why when Donald Trump was running for president and then won the election, everybody was freaking out. Politicians from both parties did not want to change the equation. So now let's look at a press release that was issued by the Office of Inspector General. And for those of you not familiar with the jargon, the Office of Inspector General is basically internal affairs. So on November 21st, just a couple days ago, the Office of Inspector General for Homeland Security issued a press release with a very harmless, innocuous sounding title. DHS-OIG fines USCIS. USCIS is a part of DHS. It's the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. They adjudicate all the applications for all sorts of benefits, political asylum, green cards, citizenship, and so forth. So DHS-OIG fines United States Citizenship and Immigration Services continues to struggle to ensure proper green card issuance. Doesn't sound all that horrible. So let me read to you this report. A new Department of Homeland Security Office of Inspector General report concludes that U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, continues to struggle to ensure proper green card issuance. The audit was conducted as a follow-up to a March 2016 report where the DHS-OIG disclosed that USCIS had potentially sent hundreds of green cards to the wrong addresses. These aren't invitations to a birthday party. These are secure documents. Think about that. Alien cards are the keys to the kingdom. You could build a wall 1,000 miles high, but if you have a green card, you walk through the port of entry and you get admitted. It is the key to America's front door. It enables you to get on board airplanes, enables you to work, enables you to enter government and corporate office buildings. That's the document that got mailed to wrong addresses. And it goes on and says, in fact, the problem was far worse than originally thought. Over the last 3 years, USCIS produced at least 19,000 cards that included incorrect information or were issued in duplicate. Additional mistakes included over 2,400 immigrants approved for two-year conditional residence status being inadvertently issued cards with a 10-year expiration date. The agency also received over 200,000 reports of cards potentially misdelivered or not being delivered to the approved applicants. 200,000. Now, this business about the two-year card is interesting because marriage fraud is a big problem. And I spent a year as an adjudications officer doing those marriage interviews back in the 70s. Because fraud was such a big problem, the government said, you know what we'll do? Instead of giving someone a green card once they're approved and they're good to go, they will get a green card that is provisional. After 2 years, the spouse has to come in and attest to the fact that they continue to live together and it's a legitimate marriage. This gives everyone an opportunity to find out that maybe this was a sham or a fraud marriage. So after 2 years, your card expires, your spouse is supposed to come in and attest to the fact, yes, we're still married, yes, we're living together, yes, we're really husband and wife. Guess what? Thousands, apparently, 2,400, that were supposed to get two-year cards, instead were issued 10-year cards. Now, while we're talking about fraud, all of the deficiencies that we're looking at where immigration is concerned is the mechanical end of approving the application. You know, the adjudicator said, okay, you're good to go, we're going to send you the card. Somehow they gave it to the wrong person, they mailed it to the wrong address, they made all kinds of mistakes. This doesn't even begin to address whether or not there's any integrity to the process so that people that got cards, for example, for being married to an American, were really living together. If they got the card based on a job, nobody apparently may have been checking to make certain that the job even existed. That's a whole separate problem. This is simply the, we're going to go to the company, and mail the cards out and make sure they get to the alien who's supposed to get them. Now, what this also means is that people that should have gotten the cards didn't. That might have meant they can't travel, they can't work, maybe they couldn't file a petition for their spouse or their minor children. So this created a hardship, again, for whom? For legitimate aliens doing everything properly. Now, this is beyond belief. And here's the final paragraph to the news release. And I want you to listen carefully to these words. This is from the press release from Internal Affairs, from the OIG. It appears that thousands of green cards have simply gone missing. In the wrong hands, green cards may enable terrorists, criminals, and undocumented aliens to remain in the United States, said Inspector General Roth. Quote, it is vital that USCIS ensure better tools and procedures are in place to mitigate such risks. And when you read through the report, please go to Front Page Magazine or read my article. But when you look at what happened, there was an opportunity so that if anybody traveling with one of those green cards walked into a port of entry, the computer would flag the card so they could stop the alien, recover the card, and perhaps either deny the alien entry into the United States or take the alien into custody. Maybe it's an illegal. They didn't do that either. In some places they did, in other places they didn't. This is like spinning the wheel of fortune. This is the lottery, and God only knows what's going to happen. It's screw up after screw up, and nobody could even figure out how to remedy it. And they even complained in the report that while they said they were going to fix it, they're moving glacially, they're going too slow, they don't seem to care. Again, how can you not care when the Inspector General warned that what they did, issuing these green cards to the wrong people, may enable terrorists and criminals to remain in the United States? Don't you think that's a serious problem? Now, I want you to understand something else. Donald Trump is probably under tremendous pressure right now to get rid of the criminal aliens, and then again, going back to that fake argument, since we can't deport everybody who's here illegally, let's simply give them lawful status. Guess which agency would be responsible for adjudicating those applications, folks? You guessed it, USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. This division of DHS is done. It is toast. It is inept. It is incompetent. It is overburdened. They process more than 6 million applications every year. They have a workforce of 19,000 employees. Imagine, 19,000 sounds like a big number, but then you're adjudicating over 6 million applications per year, and this is hardly a new problem. In fact, in March of 2002, to everyone's horror, it was discovered that two of the dead terrorists from the 9/11 attack, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, and Atta was the ringleader, both had been granted authorization, of all things, to attend flight school in the United States, March of 2002, 6 months to the day after 9/11. So you would think, 6 months after 9/11, the whole world knew that A, they were terrorists, and B, they were dead. How in the world could that happen? Well, if you look at my article for Front Page Magazine, you will see that I've provided a link to the C-SPAN video as well as a link to the transcript of that hearing about how these two dead terrorists got permission to go to flight school. I was one of the four witnesses called to testify at the hearing, and it was surreal. And if you watch the hearing, and I urge you to take the time, it's about 2 hours, watch the hearing, and you'll be amazed, because politicians, Congress members from both sides of the aisle were indignant. How could this happen? This must never again happen. If it ever happens again, we're going to go after everybody. Not a single promise was kept. Not one solitary single promise was kept, even though we understand this is all about national security. National security. I guarantee you that with the mad dash for the airports, that little children and the elderly were probably getting strip searched by TSA, because that's serious business. You never know when that 90-year-old is going to jump up and tackle the flight crew, or when that 5-year-old is going to take on the flight crew. Folks, this is madness. Sheer madness. But, you know, my dad used to tell me that I could teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I'm willing to accept. When you consider how dangerous this era is, when you realize that there are mayors who are running sanctuary cities, and you realize that there are members of Congress talking about legalizing millions of aliens who snuck into the country, and then whether you think that's a good idea or not, just look at the level of ineptitude demonstrated by USCIS repeatedly, ask yourself the question, what in the world is the Department of Homeland Security really doing? It has gotten so bad, I call it the Department of Homeland Surrender. But you see, the thing of it is that nothing is going to change until we, the people, demand that it changes. And when people start telling you that you're being xenophobic, this is kind of like being back in the schoolyard with the bullies. And the bully said, if you don't jump off the roof, chicken, you're a coward. How many stupid things did people do for fear of being called a chicken or a coward, right? How many kids came home with broken legs and broken ankles and injured arms? If you don't do this, you're a coward. If you don't do that, you're a chicken. And they would give you all these crazy things and wait to see who they could intimidate into doing stupid stuff. And there was never a shortage of idiots. There was never a shortage. So now they're not saying you're a chicken. They're saying if you want the border secure, you're a hater. You're a racist. You're a xenophobe. You're a bigot. Now, if you think in this era that it's wrong to be careful that we don't let people in who want to kill us, if you think that that's a reasonable argument, you're not a xenophobe. You're not a bigot. You're a jackass. Those borders and those immigration laws are America's first line of defense and last line of defense. And to have people make those accusations and watch Americans do exactly what they should not be doing out of a fear of being labeled xenophobe is outrageous, pathetic. I mean, on one part, I want to be proud of those Americans because they're saying, look, I'm not a xenophobe. I don't want anyone to even think I'm a xenophobe, which is very nice. I mean, I like the idea that people are respectful of everybody else. But that's not what this is about. This is a false argument. If you're really concerned about people who are vulnerable, think about the Kate Steinleys. Think about people like Don Rosenberg's 25-year-old son who was killed by an alien driving without a license in San Francisco. Think about Robert Machado, a 24-year-old police officer who was killed by Ronaldo Rayside in New York City. I had physically deported Rayside. He was a drug dealer from Panama. He had a green card and lost it because of his drug convictions. Gets arrested twice by the New York City Police Department in the 80s. And even back then, we had sanctuary policies. Ed Koch was the mayor. I thought Ed was a great mayor, but he had sanctuary policies in place. So when Ronaldo Rayside gets arrested by the NYPD, not once but twice, the cops couldn't tell immigration that they had him, even though coming back was a felony. This guy should have been prosecuted. So the third time he's encountered by Robert Machado, a 24-year-old cop whose wife is pregnant. He grabs from Machado's gun. Machado dies on a street corner in Brooklyn. He was part of the Brooklyn South Task Force, a division of the NYPD. Ironically, I did a lot of work with Brooklyn South going after drug dealers. So here's this young cop dead. 20 years later, by accident, I'm in a supermarket. Young lady at the cashier's counter wearing a miniature police badge. I start chatting with her. Turns out that her father was Robert Machado. She never got to meet him. Those are the people we need to be protecting. Honest, decent Americans. Honest, decent, lawful immigrants. People who every single day are falling victim to violent thugs from around the world. People whose lives are at risk because of terrorists seeking to embed themselves in countries, in cities around this country. If you're really worrying about doing the right thing here is to enforce immigration laws that were enacted to protect innocent lives and the jobs of Americans. That makes sense. But to run scared because someone's going to point the finger at you and say, oh, my God, you want to enforce the immigration laws? You're anti-immigrant. No, actually, That position is pro-enforcement. And what I ask all of you to do is when you're in those situations, I don't want people starting out and having a ruckus out there, but stand your ground. Stand your ground. The First Amendment, everyone says First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion. Well, it is. There's two other components. The right to seek redress of grievances from the government. And if you don't have grievances, you're brain dead. And the right for peaceable assemblage. Now, why do you think the Founding Fathers included the right for peaceable assemblage? They did it because they wanted to encourage debate and discourse. Safe areas on college campuses are anti-American and dangerous. See, debate, and I was going to teach debate, my degree was in communications way back when. Debate is how people arrive at an understanding of an issue and they get to pick which way of doing business makes the most sense. And the reason there are safe areas on campuses is because the people that have created the safe areas know that their positions on these issues makes no sense. They know they can't withstand a challenge. They know they could never win a debate. So what do? They shut down the discussions. They shut down the debates. They make certain that no matter what happens, the only version of anything that's going to be told on the campus is what the administration sanctions, what the student government sanctions. The hell with reality. The hell with the First Amendment. The hell with the right to question anything. You're going to do it our way or else. That is not American, folks. That is not American. It is foolish. It is dangerous. We've got to get involved in this government. Donald Trump is coming in. We should be encouraged. But until we see what he does and how he does it, we need to keep our eyes open. And we certainly need to go after the mayors of sanctuary cities. How do we go after them? By supporting candidates who oppose them. By supporting candidates who oppose sanctuary state governors. By making certain that our immigration laws are fairly but effectively enforced. And this comes back to the whole reason for my having this program. Because you're not hearing this on the mainstream media. You aren't. In the days, weeks, months, even a couple of years after 9/11, I was doing perhaps 15 TV interviews per month. They couldn't get enough of the debates. All of a sudden, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and Wall Street and others who are profiting through exploitation have done everything in their power to shut down the debates, to shut down the discussions, and to shut down honest coverage about these issues in the mainstream media. And that's why I do this program, because I want you to understand the story behind the story. You're not going to hear this anywhere else. So I ask you, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to capsweb.org. Go to Front Page Magazine. Go to The Social Contract. Go to Progressives for Immigration Reform. Read my articles. If they make sense to you, please pass them along. I call it my bucket brigade of truth. Because at the end of the day, Americans need to flex their political muscle. They need to make certain that those political representatives truly represent us. And please don't be intimidated by the liars and by the folks out there that would run roughshod over this country. And they are running roughshod over this country. The ranting and the raving and the screaming and the demonstrations and the violence. You know, one of the great parts of American politics, the way we do business up until this year, is this notion of nonviolent transference of power no matter who wins the election. If you look at the riots, you would almost think you're watching a third world country. And that's what we're also witnessing in the workplace. Because when third world workers come to America, they come with their third world expectations of wages and working conditions. Slowly but surely, America is evolving into a third world country. Third world countries don't have a middle class. Third world countries don't have freedom. Third world countries are extremely corrupt very often, and there's a sense of hopelessness among the masses. If you look at the economy here in America, the constant degradation of wages, wage suppression, please realize what we're witnessing. America is transforming into a third world country. And this isn't a statement about race. It's a statement about economics and government. And only we can turn it around. You know, I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. I thank you for joining me. Hope you again will join me next week at the same time, same place, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you next week. So long for now.